Hello and welcome back to Dropping the Hammer with Daniel McFadden, presented by the Arkansas Democrat Gazette. I'm Daniel McFadden, and I'm joined once again by my co-host Jared Haas to talk about NASCAR. And this week, we're talking about NASCAR's trip to Worldwide Technology Raceway in Madison, Illinois, otherwise known by people who know, real ones, as Gateway.
It's Gateway in our hearts.
It's Gateway in our hearts, as we mentioned last week. It's Gateway in our hearts. Kyle Busch was the winner of the Enjoy Illinois 300, the second annual cup race at the 1.25-mile track there in Madison, Illinois.
Gano inside Larson, but off turn four, Kyle Busch will get his 63rd career victory in the NASCAR Cup Series.
It was a long day, an eventful day, a weird day, lightning, walls having to be repaired, broken rotors, at least four of them, Austin Dillon and Austin Cindric having a mini one-sided type feud, which has now resulted in Austin Cindric posting like
a thread on
Twitter. A lot happened. A lot happened on Sunday.
You got to experience what I did a little bit at the Coca-Cola 600. We both had delays. At least your delay wasn't as long.
But oh yeah, I was at Gateway to cover this race for the Arkansas Democrat Gazette. My first time there. Like you just said, you've been there multiple times. It was a long day. The race started. I was on pit road as all the cars were roaring by, and then the caution for Tyler Reddick happened in lap two. I run to the media center. I get into my seat, and as soon as I sit in my seat, somebody, I think in front of me, says, "Lightning." I was like, "Wait, what are you talking about? Lightning delay? No, why would there be a lightning delay?" And then 2 hours passed of us waiting for lightning to go away in the area, because it was lightning like as close as 4 miles away from the track. It was long and excruciating. There's a 30-minute, for those who don't know, when there's a lightning strike during a NASCAR race, it goes into a lightning hold for 30 minutes until we go 30 minutes without a lightning strike within a six?
It's like 12 miles radius.
Okay, yeah, something like that.
It's a multi-mile. It's quite a few mile radius.
So, yeah. So it was as close as 4 miles, and the clock would be ticking, and we'd get like within 15 minutes of it expiring and reset. We got as close as 8 minutes, and it reset.
And you know, here's the funniest part. I was actually out of town for a wedding this past weekend, and it started the race. I was still driving back. I think I was just getting into Arkansas from Texas when the race started. And with those
started or restarted?
No, when it started, I was listening to MRN radio for the first few laps, and then as soon as I get home, like 2 hours later, that's when the cars. I opened the door, turned on the TV. Cars were rolling off of pit road, finally getting out there. So I spent my whole delay driving back home, but at least got to see the majority of the race.
And all right, so what did you think of this weird race? Because it was so uneven, because we had three red flags, including the lightning one. We had five cautions within like the last 50 some laps. It was just a herky jerk, like race there towards the end.
It's something where it's a lot of things out of their control. You had the lightning. You know, that's not Gateway's fault. You had brake rotors. That's car part. That's not a track fault. You had drivers driving over their heads in the late races, it seemed like. Later stages, not really the track's fault. So I think if you look at the perspective of like the track, you know, they put on a pretty decent race, but it's just all these external factors that just, you know, affected this race weekend, made it a lot longer than it should, and even like pushed FS1 right over. I think it was like a soccer game that they had afterwards too. That was actually had to go be pushed to FS2. That's how long the race ran.
Gosh, but it was a long, long night. The official time of the race was 3 hours, 28 minutes, and 16 seconds. But it started at 2:42, and we were on pit road talking to drivers after the race at like 8:30.
Yeah, it was late.
So that's what it was. But Kyle Busch came away with the win. It's his third win of the year. Mm-hmm. That ties in with William Byron to lead the series. if you look at the scoreboard,
yeah,
it's a KFB 3, JGR 3.
Yeah, let's take
15 races.
Let's take a rundown through the top 10 real quick. We had Kyle Busch obviously scoring the win from the pole position. You had Denny Hamlin in second place. Joey Logano, last year's winner, was in third. Kyle Larson in fourth. Martin Truex Jr. finished in fifth. Ryan Blaney was sixth. Daniel Suarez ended up in seventh. William Byron, as you mentioned, finished eighth. Mike McDowell finished ninth. And Kevin Harvick, in his final race at Gateway, finished at 10th position.
Yeah, and though last week I did pick on this podcast William Byron to win based off what he did at Phoenix. On Sunday, my Twitter pick was Kevin Harvick. Because I thought, you know what, he's starting fourth. This is a Busch Beer's hometown. You know, this is where he got his first National Series win in the Xfinity Series back in 2000.
Yeah.
So I was like, hey, let's go for a full circle moment kind of thing.
I want more of a logistical. My pick was Logano finished third, and I said, watch out for Kyle Busch and Martin Truex. Both of them, Kyle Busch won, Truex finished fifth. So
this was a deja vu kind of race at the end, because last year it came down to an overtime finish, mm-hmm. and Kyle Busch trying to hang on for the win, and he couldn't. Yep. Gave it up to Logano, but this time he was able to hold off Hamlin, Logano, and all those guys for his win. Though he has three wins this year, it's not like those have been. It's been a very dominant year.
Yeah.
For Kyle Busch, like he just got his first stage win.
Yeah.
this weekend.
Well, I think this is somewhere of Kyle Busch. You know, I think what I kind of predicted in the offseason, I predicted that Kyle Busch would have at least three wins this season. He hasn't had more than two wins since his 2019 championship season with five wins. And I think that it's very true that Kyle Busch needed a reset with Joe Gibbs Racing. Obviously, there was the tension with trying to sign the contract. They couldn't get that sponsorship deal to happen. So it was a fresh new beginning for Kyle Busch with the old foal of Richard Childress Racing, and it was ironic there, what was it, like the anniversary of Richard Childress?
Yeah, it was like the 11th or 12th anniversary of the Hold My Watch incident, which, if you don't know, a little over a decade ago, Childress and Kyle Busch, it was after a truck race, wasn't it?
So I think it was after Kansas, yeah. It was something like that. And they, you know, fought, and that's kind of where the beef started between those two. And I mean, they've had on-track excursions, but, I mean, time heals all wounds, as they say.
And so does wins.
Exactly. But this is what we're kind of seeing, the revitalized Kyle Busch. I mean, we haven't seen that much revitalized Kyle Busch since, like, the 2008 season, where he's just, like, having fun. And 2008 Kyle Busch was pretty dangerous, especially not postseason, but I'm talking about regular season as well.
Well, I'd say when he came back from his injury in 2015 and was kicking butt, he was pretty revitalized.
Yeah, it's the revitalization thing. And, I mean, already, what was it, Kyle Busch in 2008, you know, before going to Sonoma, he had four wins he had on the season. But, I mean, he's pretty good on track pace to have a pretty good season.
So, looking again at that top five, Kyle Larson in fourth. I wrote my story that appeared in Monday's issue of the sports section at the Arkansas Democrat Gazette on Larson. He finished fourth after starting just absolutely horrible. he started 22nd and then dropped like a rock by lap 29. He was getting passed by Carson Hocevar
in the number seven. Corey LaJoie.
And Corey LaJoie. But this was Carson Hocevar, who's 20 years old, making his first NASCAR Cup Series start for Spire Motorsports, and he's getting passed by him. That's how bad it was for Larson. And by the end of this race, he's fourth, and he's telling us on pit road that's one of the most proud top fives he's had in his Cup career. Which that's impressive, especially where they started. And he was helped by a pit call for two tires by crew chief Cliff Daniels during a caution with just under like 66 laps to go. Mm-hmm. And he took two tires, and Michael McDowell took two tires, and they both finished in the top 10. And there's a lot of talk about how there just wasn't a lot of tire fall off in this race, so that they definitely benefited from that. And I talked to Cliff Daniels after the race, and I asked him if he was surprised that the two tires choice paid off. He's like, no, and he had this like kind of baffled look that kind of crossed his face, and he said, I'm surprised other teams didn't do it.
Yeah.
More teams didn't do it, because he said, last year, around the same portion of the race, six different teams, like the front six or whatever, took two tires. And so this year, same thing happens, but only two do it. So That seems to be like this common theme when it comes to like crew chief strategy calls lately. It's like no one does what the common sense thing would be.
Well, you got to realize something. Something that I want to hear about your thing. What happened from your perspective, and that kind of affected the race. There was a fiber optic issue where the TV broadcast and MRN lost. They lost their connection with the radio, and even crew chiefs were saying that up and down pit road they couldn't really access like war room stuff and data. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of those teams didn't know what tires were on pit road. I'm curious to hear from your perspective on the ground how that was affecting you in the media center when the fiber optic issues happened when Carson Hocevar had his incident.
Well, it happened like right after Carson's accident. Yes. And so we're going out to the infield medical center, which is like right outside the media center. And we're all gathered there, and I think that's when we found out, yeah, Fox and MRN are down. Like, wait, what? Like, yeah, nationwide. What? Really? Mm-hmm. It's like, so we're trying to like figure out what's going on, and then we all interview Carson, and it was so loud down there we could barely hear Carson. Mm-hmm. Most of our and so we get back at the media center, and like most of the TVs are down, and I think that a couple of TVs had like one camera showing what was going on in the race, so we had no Fox broadcast or MRN. We had no idea what was going on in the race. we were in the dark for a while before it came back up. But I didn't realize until later that it had affected the teams as well. I wish I had asked Cliff Daniels about that. I should have, about how that affected his team. But no, it was a weird day. Probably no more weird than for Corey LaJoie and the number 9 car substituting for
Chase Elliott.
The suspended Chase Elliott. He just did not have a good day, even though he finished 21st. He mostly ran around 30th all day after starting there. I know Bob Pockers had a brief interview with him after the race, and he was clearly disappointed.
Yeah.
Which, who wouldn't be in that situation?
This isn't really Hendrick's best track. I mean, they were really struggling even before. There was even one point Larson was falling back, and they were about one lap down, that Corey LaJoie passed Kyle Larson. And Kyle Larson, with the strategy and stuff, ended up at the top 5, and Corey LaJoie didn't. But Corey LaJoie finished 21st. Then he had Hendrick Motorsports teammate Alex Bowman finish 26th. Mm. So it's kind of been a mixed bag. This is not the best track for Hendrick Motorsports, so but it's hard to gauge like, okay, is this Corey versus Chase? Because if you look at last year's results, Chase actually ironically finished in 21st as well too.
Well, he was in an accident.
Yes.
So
he had issues too. Corey LaJoie had issues at the start, but they ironically LaJoie finished in the same place that Chase Elliott did last year.
Okay. If it's any consolation for Corey LaJoie, it's like Larson. Yeah, Larson also had trouble, mm-hmm. but I think a big difference was the 5 team was their normal crew. It's the driver and crew chief who've been working together for 3 years now. And you have Corey LaJoie working with a crew chief he's never worked for, and then they don't have access to data.
Yeah, and I think if I recall correctly, like they were even saying the sim work they were behind with Corey LaJoie when he was there. There was a lot of stuff behind the 8-ball for Corey LaJoie, but, he salvaged a 21st-place finish. He even finished ahead of Ross Chastain.
Did he?
Yes. Okay. Ross Chastain finished 22nd. So, okay. It's not like, he didn't blow the doors off of people. He just did what he had to do, but it wasn't like something that's going to be opportunity knocking just yet.
But if I am Corey LaJoie, I'm upset that you were being outrun by your old car, the 7 car, by being driven by a rookie driver.
Yeah, Carson Hocevar there's definitely some talent that Hocevar has. It's just the question is can he close the deal and can he go up to the rise to the ranks because he's currently in the truck series.
But yeah, he's also made 3 Xfinity starts in the last month, and he's had 2 top 10s out of those 3 starts in the number 77 car,
which is
fire. Which is not, a top funded car.
Yeah.
So he's doing impressive stuff right now, and he was on his way to potentially being like the story of the race on Sunday, and then he was the first guy out, thanks to broken brake rotors.
Again, it's Reddick. I saw it right in front of those guys. Saw the smoke. I think it's the exact same situation. Now, he was a two-tire guy here, but I think you're looking at the same exact thing, running seventh, just like Carson Hocevar. I saw the smoke in those guys' screen there, and man, sure enough, Reddick.
very good pivot on there. Yeah, this is what it's kind of more just the product of the car again, that with these longer straightaways, and I think they were mentioning it of like, you know, they're all right with being on high heat, but it's like you press hard on the brakes going into turn one and two, then you let off so they cool, and then you brake again in turn three and four, and then that hot, cool, that temperature fluctuation just breaks those brake rotors.
Yeah, and Randall Burnett, who's the crew chief for Kyle Busch, and also a St. Louis native, so this was a home win for Mr. Burnett. He was asked about the brake rotor issues, and even though they didn't have any issues, Randall provided his insight into what was potentially causing that problem. So here's that audio.
This makes that.
Well, I think people probably came back. I think teams last year came here a little more conservative last year, not knowing, and I think we all took data from that and went home and looked, and you know, we get options on heavy duty rotors or light duty rotors, so we can kind of choose that, and we obviously choose how much cooling we run to them, and you know, like Richard said, it's kind of a tough place because the straightaways are so long and you're off the brakes for such a long time, and then you apply them really hard at the end of the straightaway, so the cycles of getting really cool down the straightaways and then really spiking up the heat, it takes a toll on the rotors. So you know, we were fortunate enough with the eight car, you know, we're kind of in the top five most all day long, and when you get back further a little bit in the pack too, and have to work your rotors harder, using brakes, racing people a lot harder, you know, those things happen. So I'm sure everybody will take a look at that and try to understand what happened with those cars.
All right. Thank you to Randall Burnett for that explanation. Fun fact, Randall Burnett, this was his sixth win in the last 2 years. He had three wins last year with Tyler Reddick. He's got three with Kyle Busch. And from what the numbers and figuring I did via Racing Reference earlier today, that makes him the winningest crew chief in the Cup Series over the last 2 years. And he had never won in the Cup Series before last year.
Yeah.
So
it's that eight teams starting to gel together. And I think, you know, it was a pretty seamless transition from Tyler Reddick to Kyle Busch for that team.
All right. So our feud of the week.
what's frying Austin Dillon's egg?
Well, keeping in the spirit of retaliation and suspensions, late in the race, Austin Dillon and Austin Cindric made contact and Austin Dillon wrecked, hitting both Ricky Stenhouse Jr. and the wall, and Austin Dillon thought it was on purpose that what Cindric did, and we have audio of the very brief interview that Austin Dillon gave with front stretcher Steven Stumpf during the race yesterday that went it kind of blew up, kind of went viral. Yeah. So here's that 17-second quote from Austin Dillon.
Fortunate end of the day for Austin Dillon. What happened with the contact with Cindric?
I was wrecked intentionally by him, hooked right, just like Chase and Denny and Bubba's deal. He better be suspended next week.
All right, thank you.
So anyway, feud of the week, Austin versus Austin. Before we recorded this morning, Austin Cindric, we have an interview with.
Yeah, ironically.
Convenient. Anyway, Mr. Cindric posted on Twitter both a video of SMT data showing what he believes, you know, justifies I didn't do this on purpose. And then he wrote a lengthy note. It wasn't in the Notes app on an iPhone. I don't know. You might have typed this up on Microsoft Word for all I know. But this is what...
That's the official press releaser of NASCAR's Microsoft Word, baby. 2003.
But here's what Austin Cindric said on Twitter about the whole run-in with Austin Dillon. I am not a fan of the idea of taking to social media to deal with on-track issues, but it has become clear to me that my voice and input is needed for the discussion to come to an end. Did AD and I make contact? Yes. Was that contact intentional? Absolutely not. All caps on not. The data is pretty cut and dry, but I've provided it since it has yet to surface from the start of these accusations. I follow the draft from the 24 car, William Byron, the length of the front straight to make it three wide, trapping the three car on the bottom, which I viewed as an advantage for me by the time we could get to the exit of turn two. Three comes up to his arch for the corner, tries to fill the gap, and is not clear. All happening right at the breaking point for the corner. I actually start to roll out of the throttle as I recognize the three car's turn to fill the gap. My steering angle does not shift to the left until we make contact. Not exactly the type of behavior you'd expect from someone trying to catch and hook another car. Safety is a very important topic and one that is taken very seriously in our industry. Reviewing the data, at no point do I see any neglect towards the safety of others on the racetrack from any drivers involved in this incident, myself included. Objectively, I cannot see how intent or, if I'm being honest, full responsibility can be placed on me here, especially racing hard for position at the end of the race. As a professional, I do not enjoy having my character in question when it is not justified. We are expected to race hard, and I will not apologize for doing so, but I will be the first person to raise my hand and listen when I've done something wrong. I've reached out to Austin so the two of us can discuss our differences as professionals. Once I hear back from him, that can happen. A.C. So, there we go. I never really saw the best replay of the incident. There wasn't, like, a top-down view like we got with, like, you know, Denny Hamlin and Chase Elliott last week. And we also, if Austin Cindric's retaliating for something, we never even saw what he was retaliating for. We never saw part one.
Yeah.
If this was part two. So it just wasn't obvious or anything in going off the data and the video that Austin Cindric shared. I don't think there was anything.
Yeah, it was more of a racing deal, and I mean, that's why NASCAR didn't suspend Austin Cindric. You got to look at all angles. I mean, if Austin Dillon calls for it and, you know, he fell with attention, that's one part of the evidence, but there's SMT data, there's Austin Cindric's output. There's a lot of factors that go into that situation, and what Denny Hamlin, you know, provided, you know, proof of the SMT data. Austin Cindric, you know, prove with the SMT data that he didn't. But, I mean, Austin Dillon's entitled to believe what he's believed to, and Austin Cindric is as well as too. But that was more of just a racing ordeal that happened on the front straightaway between the two Austins.
And that's what NASCAR determined. They looked at all the available data, and they will not be suspending Austin Cindric at Austin Dillon's request. But, like I mentioned, we have an interview with Austin Cindric. This was recorded last week, before this race, so no, we don't get to ask him about this whole feud with the other Austin. No, this was recorded last Tuesday, something like that, ahead of Gateway. So the first question of this interview, I ask him about, hey, what's it like at Team Penske after you guys swept Indy 500, Coke 600? So mm-hmm. that's in there. I get to ask him about Star Wars because he's a big Star Wars fan, so I had to ask him about that. The best part of this interview, I asked him about his project car. They sent over like a packet of information about Austin Cindric, and one of his hobbies is he works on a project car. So you'll get to find out what that project car is, and it's part of a coyote swap, which was a term I've never heard before until he said it last week. So it's a weird car. With an engine that just does not go with that weird car.
I just want to dive in. Shall we dive in?
But first off, Austin Cindric, he finished 13th this last weekend at Gateway. That was his best finish since he finished 6th at COTA in March.
Yep.
So a much-needed, decent run for Team Penske's Austin Cindric. Here's my interview with Austin Cindric, driver of the number 2 Ford at Team Penske. I'm doing good. How are you on this fine Wednesday?
Not too bad. Getting ready to roll.
So I guess I only got you for about like 10 minutes, I think. So I guess first off, man, like, what's the vibe been like at Team Penske the last couple days after your huge race weekend?
Yeah, obviously a pretty massive week for the team, for Roger, everyone, Joseph, Ryan. A lot to unpack there. So certainly cool to be able to watch both of those. Unfortunately, I was watching the end of the Coke 600, but Definitely a long overdue win for Ryan and that team. Those guys crushed it all day. Totally deserve that result, and a long overdue win for Joseph at the Indy 500. So cool to be able to see all that. Big week. Back to work.
So now that Ryan Blaney's won, how much pressure are you and the two team feeling to punch your own ticket back to victory lane? Since you haven't won since the Daytona 500 last year, how much pressure is there on you now?
I don't think it changes anything. Obviously, I got two teammates with wins, and I think deservedly so. And I don't think we've been in a position to challenge for that over the last month and a half. Last month and a half has been challenging in every facet of what makes racing challenging some days, and we have yet to kind of just have a normal weekend in a while. So kind of looking forward to just doing that again. But regardless, the pressure, I don't really look at this pressure. The opportunity is still the same. You win and you're in the playoffs. We have that opportunity to do it every week. So from my standpoint, job's the same. Just one less week to do it.
If you could use one word to describe this first quarter of the season for you guys, what would it be?
One word. Well, I wouldn't want to use the word frustrating, but that's what it's been. You know what you're capable of as an individual and what you're also capable of as a team. You know, we sit down and rewatch races from last year, and I'm a year smarter, and where you're stronger and you're behind the car. And, it's about executing at the same time for us right now. We have a lot of the right pieces. It's just putting them down at the same time, laying the right cards down all in the same day, which is what makes this series so challenging and so competitive, and why the guys that are able to do that every week are so impressive. And that's something we have yet to really do a very good job at this year. In times last year, we were doing better at that. I think there has to be patience with that being said, because you have to trust the process. You know what's possible. So why change who you are or what you do or how you prepare for something that you know will line this up if everyone gets together and puts their heads down and does their jobs.
What do you think's been like the biggest hurdle for you guys this year? Like, what's been holding you back? If you could point to something.
Execution.
In any specific area, or is it just overall?
All of the above. Driver, strategy, pit crew, sometimes raw speed, just anything. I mean, you name it. We've had engine troubles. We've had tires falling off. We've been in wrecks at times. Yeah. You know, just anything that's possible, you know, has occurred over the last 2 months. And we've talked about it. It's an opportunity sport in the fact that we race every week. So like the opportunity to right all the wrongs. But you also have the opportunity to like make it even worse and compounds really fast.
Yeah. So,
from that standpoint, it's easy to kind of get down on yourself or, you know, the outcome or whatever else and look at stats and numbers. And, you know, I can't even tell you where I'm at in points right now, because I can't say we've had a weekend that's been worth looking at points for. Including this past weekend at Charlotte, which I would say is that's on the driver execution side of things. So got to clean up and be able to maximize our strengths.
How eager are you to get to Sonoma?
I finished top five there last year. I like the racetrack. It leads into an off weekend, which is nice. it's the coveted off weekend when they release the NASCAR schedule every year. The off weekend is on the calendar because there's only one of them, so it's a big deal, and there's a reason. So but otherwise, Sonoma should be, hopefully a good opportunity for us to to run well. I think Gateway would be a good opportunity for us to run well. We were able to lead laps, win a stage there last year, had a really dominant race as a team. 22 car won the race. So I feel like we have some good notes going into the next two races for us right before the off week. So good opportunities for us.
What are your plans for the off week?
Hibernate.
Just sleep.
Sleep, turn my phone off for a day or two and get back after it.
I got a packet of information that people at Gateway sent over, and one of the things on it said that one of your hobbies is you work on a project car. I was wondering what is your project car?
My project car is a 1993 Volvo 240 station wagon that I am coyote swapping. So putting the 5-liter V8 that comes in a new Ford Mustang into a old boxy grocery getter station wagon. There's probably a long chain of why I'm doing what I'm doing. Some of it comes to my rallycross roots and hanging out with a bunch of Swedes. But I think station wagons are kind of fun and goofy, and that's a, you know, pretty easily accessible vehicle. And it's lightweight and it has a big engine bay, and lightweight means fast, and big engine bay means big engine can go in. So, it's been a lot of fun. I've done all the work on it. Well, the majority of the work on it I've done myself. I've been working on it since the end of 2018.
Okay.
Nowhere near completion. It's been a great conversation topic. And I've learned a lot while doing it. So hopefully one day we'll see that thing on the road.
You need to take a picture of this car and like put it on Twitter. I want to see this.
It's I have a whole Instagram highlight reel. It's kind of where I have so many highlight reels. I didn't know you could even fill up a highlight reel. I don't know how many there are, but there's a maximum, and I've reached the maximum, and I'll need to create a second one to continue to add on to it. So, pretty much from the day I bought it to within the last couple of months, that highlight reel should be able to get you up to date.
All right. Before I let you go, because I think we're about to run out of time, what were your thoughts about Star Wars Andor? What'd you think of it?
I really liked it. It was like not very Disney, which I think was good. I mean, you started the first episode in a Star Wars strip club. Like, that's not very Disney. And not that like that's where my interests necessarily lie, but like that's not where you would have expected them to go with it. But like, you have to imagine, you know, in the Star Wars universe, there has to be one. They've got all these gangsters and crime bosses. I mean, you know, it makes the strip club seem a little harmless the more you think about it. But I liked how dystopian it was.
Yeah.
You know, just the way, like, you knew the Empire is bad just because, like, you know, there's good guys and bad guys. That's, you know, how movies work. But like, now you actually get to see what made them so bad on like the ground level.
Mm-hmm. So of all the Star Wars like TV shows and movies that are coming out soon in the next year or so, which one are you most excited for?
I think the storyline that the possible storyline that falls with Ahsoka could be pretty interesting with Rebels and Thrawn, and how that ties in with the Mandalorian, and, you know, where are they going to go, because they're all seeming to converge, you know, at some point. I feel like everyone can kind of see that coming now with how the Mandalorian's gone. So excited to see where that takes us.
All right, man. I had to ask. So thanks for answering, and good luck this weekend.
Yep. Thanks, Daniel.
Thanks, Austin. All right. Well, thank you for Austin Centric, and that had been set up by the people at Gateway last week. So had a good time talking to him, even though it was very brief. So what do you think of Austin Centric and where he is currently in his Cup career? It's year two. He hasn't won since Daytona 500. What do you think?
Yeah, I think, you know, there's that pressure of Austin Cindric. You've had Logano, he's won, and then Blaney just broke his winless streak. So it's now everyone looking for Cindric. You know, it's the sophomore slump, I think, is probably the best way to describe this type of thing, where, you know, he didn't really get his footing last year, and if you compare stats, he actually has a worse average finish. Only has two top tens this season. Yeah. And he had 9 top tens the entire last season. So,
well, last year, even with his Daytona 500 win at this point in the season, he only had 2 top tens.
Yeah.
But this year he lacks a win. So it's not not a great comparison for him.
Well, let's just say this much, too. Last season, going after Gateway, he finished 5th at Sonoma, 7th at Nashville, 7th at Road America, and 3rd at Atlanta.
So he had a good summer.
He had a good summer. Let's. I think that this is going to be the proving point this next month or so for Austin Cindric to say, okay, is this going to be better than 2022 or is this going to be worse than 2022?
But like I said, they are going to Sonoma this weekend. He finished 5th there last year. He is good on the road courses. That comes from his background in sports cars. So we'll see if he can repeat that performance from last year or better it. But no, it's time to preview this weekend's race at Sonoma Raceway. Here we go with Sonoma. Anyway, all right. It's time for the annual visit to Sonoma Raceway out in Sonoma, California with the Toyota Save Mart 350. Save Mart's been like the sponsor of this race since like the dawn of time.
Decades.
I think the start of the race, maybe? I don't know. But yeah. Like since at least the early 90s. So that's one of the longest serving sponsors.
I mean, they've had it's been like the Toyota Save Mart and the Dodge Save Mart, and like it's been a lot of Save Marts. And let's see here. And the first race was actually sponsored by Banquet Frozen Foods.
Okay.
And I'll have to check this out for you while you preview it. I'll tell you when the next time that Save Mart was
but,
there.
But Sonoma, it's a 1.99-mile road course out in Sonoma, California. This weekend's race will be 110 laps around that track. Last year's race, it was won by Daniel Suarez, who got his first career NASCAR Cup win. He did it in pretty dominating fashion, led 47 laps out of 110. The top five for that race was Chris Buescher, Michael McDowell, Kevin Harvick, and Austin Cindric. Sonoma's not my favorite of the road courses. My favorite's like Watkins Glen of the old school too. It's just faster, has better, more exciting races. But Sonoma sometimes has its moments.
Yeah, 1992 was the first race that Save Mart sponsored it. So over 30 years.
Wow.
Save Mart's been their sponsor for that race. But, you know, I actually enjoy Sonoma more than Watkins Glen because it's a technical course. You know, Watkins Glen, you have a lot of high-speed corners that go into stuff. Sure, you had, like, the bus stop. You'll have some corners. But Sonoma has that hairpin. There's a lot of elevation change going in and out and even avoiding tire barriers coming off of, what was that, turn 4 or 5 near the uphill portion of the racetrack. So, That's why it's like I said, Watkins Glen, Sonoma, very contrasty road courses. But this is going to be the technical of the two of those road courses, more of a technical road course. So it's not going to be someone that's, you know, it's going to be someone their skill is going to shine.
So who do you think is going to shine on Sunday? Who's going to win the Toyota Save Mart 350?
As I said, I'm wide open. I've considered Tyler Reddick, but I looked at last year's results. And Toyota's best finish, the best Toyota, was Kurt Busch back in 18th place. So I'm a little hesitant to say Tyler Reddick.
But hey, Reddick won at Reddick, Quota.
Reddick won at Quota. Daniel's
Quota.
Yeah, the quota of Quota. Daniel Suarez would be also a good pick. He won here last year, led 47 laps. The last time that someone who, you know, failed to win a race when leading the most laps in a race was 2017. I'm actually going to go with the Ford. I'm actually, you know, I think Austin Cindric can get it done this weekend.
That was going to be my pick, but so now I got to pick someone else.
What are your ones to watch?
Ones to watch. Well, I mean, Ross Chastain he disappeared the last 3 weeks. I think we need to like put his face on the side of a milk carton. I don't know if you're old enough to get that reference.
No, I get that reference. It's like, yeah, he was in the news for the past, you know, besides that past 3 weeks, he was in the news the past 3 weeks.
So, for disappearing. So I kind of want to, like, he's good at the road courses. I don't remember where Ross
finished 7th last year.
I know what I was going to say at Coda. I don't know where he finished at Coda. So, but man. I'm gonna go with Ross. I think he's gonna pull one out of a hat. So I'm gonna take Ross Chastain.
Ross finished fourth last year at COTA.
Okay.
Last road course there, so he did finish top five.
Oh no, he charged at the end of that race. He actually came out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Like he had spun around and then all of a sudden, bang. Back in the top five. So, yeah, Ross Chastain.
That was the chaotic race. And let's remember this, folks.
Oh, yeah, no stages.
No stage breaks. We have stages, no stage breaks. So strategy is going to come a key part of the situation. You know, it's not going to be guaranteed that the fastest car wins this race. It's going to be the person with the best strategy when the cautions come out, whether it's stages, you know, stage ends or not.
Now I'm excited. Oh, I forgot.
Now you're excited for Sonoma.
No stage breaks. All right. Cool.
You were whining about Sonoma, but now you're on top of it.
Whining? I was whining? I just said it wasn't my favorite.
Wine country?
I hate you.
We'll be here next week. Don't worry.
We're here all night. The Toyota Save Mart 350, that'll be 2:30 p.m. Central on Fox. This is the end of the Fox portion of the schedule. After the off week next week, NBC picks it back up at Nashville.
We won't be at Sonoma, though. But I know. We broke our streak of three races for one of us two being at a race. So
you're going to Nashville, right?
I am going to Nashville.
And I'm going to Chicago.
I'm kind of jealous. I was like, you know, maybe Chicago, but I'm like, I'll go to Nashville. Chicago would have been a nice track, but I figured out my next race is going to be the Xfinity Standalone event at Road America.
I was going to ask, why are you going to an Xfinity Standalone event?
I mean, did you see what happened to Portland? Chaos ensued.
I went to Road America last year. It's a neat track.
I'm excited to cross it off my list.
You will be shocked that there's a track there. Because there are no signs saying that there's a world-class racing facility in the middle of Wisconsin, and then you literally don't know it's there until you're pulling up to the gate. Oh, hey, Road America's here. So it's a weird, cool track. Make sure you walk around.
Oh yeah, I will, like I said. But don't be afraid to be plugged back into this podcast. As well, as always, you can find me on Twitter at Real Jared Haas. Daniel,
you can find me at Daniel McFadden on Twitter, and email me at dmcfadden@adgnewsroom.com. And programming note, since there's an off week, next week, we're not having a normal episode. We have a special interview with the Daytona 500 winner Ricky Stenhouse Jr. I recorded that over the weekend up at the track in St. Louis. So that'll be a good thing for you guys to listen to. He's from Olive Branch, Mississippi, which is basically makes him, which is right across the border, right
in Mississippi, around there. In Memphis.
Yeah, he's the local, basically, cup driver for Arkansas. So I wanted to introduce him to our audience, to our Kansans, and he's the Daytona 500 winner. That's a big deal.
Yeah.
So looking forward to sharing that with you guys next week. So tune in for that. Tell your friends, tell your family, and tell your loved ones. So, all right. That's been this week on Dropping the Hammer with Daniel McFadden. I'm Daniel McFadden.
This is Jared Haas here.
We'll talk to you in 2 weeks after the off week. So enjoy Sonoma and enjoy a week off.
Signing out here.
Have a great day.